or Doncaster, I think this choice, I'm really grateful. I do meetings like this around the country, and you know, the best thing about it is that you walk amongst heroes and heroines. What we heard tonight was a group of heroes and heroines, and something at the back there as well. They just remind me what our movement is all about, and some within Westminster and elsewhere sometimes forget. It's important that we do remind ourselves. I want to try and situate what we're doing in Sheffield in what's happening around the rest of the country as well, because it's important when we go into these campaigns we understand why they're needed, what our objectives are, and how we can succeed. And the reason we need this campaign for, yes, £10 an hour campaign is, but the reason we need this campaign in terms of decent wages overall is because at the moment, despite all the promises, all that they tell us in this economic system, that actually the way to lift yourself out of poverty is to get a job, and that governments are all about ensuring full employment. What we now know is that actually two-thirds of our kids that live in poverty, and there's nearly 5 million of them, two-thirds of them live in families where their parents are at work. We're the sixth richest country in the world. And last year, the Trestle Trust handed out a million emergency food parcels, because people largely in work in the sixth richest country in the world couldn't feed their kids. I think that's a social crime, to be frank, a social crime. And we know why that's happening. It's not rocket science. It's a simple fact. It's because wages are so low. But why are they so low? It's because in the last few years, for the first time in generations, more of our national income is going to shareholders than the wealth creators, the workers themselves. We've not seen that since before the Second World War. And it isn't just wages are so low. We heard from Gareth Bale. It's people, we have now probably a million people at least, and possibly more, who just don't know from 1 week to the next how many hours they'll work. We have millions who are forced into underemployment. We have some of the lowest wages across Europe now. 4 out of the 5 regions of our country have lower wages than the rest of Europe on average. And it's because of low wages, not knowing the hours you work, and the point that was made before, a balance of power between workers and employers that have introduced in our country, especially, a bullying culture within employment practices themselves. Sometimes, you know, when you watch the media, this message just doesn't come across at all. If you hear about industrial disputes, and occasionally you'll get shock horror about Sports Direct, but actually ingrained in employment practices within our society overall, they're just the shock horror practices. But as you've seen in McDonald's and the fast food workers' campaign, it's ingrained within that sector. It's ingrained within retail, in hospitality, in social care. 60% of the low pay is in social care. Who do you think works there? Women. Women have borne 80% of the austerity measures that this government has introduced. That the women's budget groups are one of our advisory groups to my economic advisory council. They've done an estimate of where austerity has fallen. I couldn't understand the groups that they identified. It's largely young women with children, but also it's older women who've actually retired. I couldn't work out why they've been hit hardest by the austerity, all the different groups. It's because within our culture still, it's women that do the caring. So if you cut back on local authority care, and local authority care in this country is now in crisis, who bears the burden of that? Women. Who are the most women that bear the burden? Retired women. because they're the ones who step into the breach when you start cutting public services. And those elderly people and those disabled people who receive that care, they're either being forced back in their homes or forced into residential care or wind up in A&E and then accused of being bedlocked. So this whole combination where we have a culture of exploitation of work whilst austerity is happening as well, is causing the greatest levels of inequality that we've seen in our society since before the Second World War. Absolutely staggering. So no wonder people are getting angry. So no wonder people are beginning to fight back. And do you know something? The difference between now and before Jeremy Corbyn was elected is that we now have a Labour leadership that is at the forefront of that fight back. Will it feel like that's where the struggle now is, where people have just had enough. And we saw it in the Brexit vote. A lot of people have different views about what happened in the Brexit vote, but a lot of that was about people just saying, we've had enough. We've had enough. Communities that have been left behind, individuals that have been left behind, wanted to say something to those that lived within the Westminster bubble about how they felt about the world and how they felt they're being treated. And yes, UKIP and others exploited that for their own ends in terms of immigration, but actually what most people were saying is that we don't like the circumstances that we're living in at the moment, and we want to send a message to those people who are making those decisions in Westminster about what's happening in our real lives. And that message, I think, is beginning to take hold, particularly this month. If even the Tory party, this is the month when the first signs of neoliberalism are showing collapse altogether. Even the Tories are having to admit now the free market doesn't work. Even the Tories are now having to admit that the levels of inequality in our society are dysfunctional in terms of how the economy works. The fractures are beginning to open up. So now's the time for us to come forward with our campaigning to expose, as has been happening tonight, what's going on, how people are being exploited, how they're suffering, but it's also for us to come forward now with the solutions that are pragmatic and practical that we can readily implement when a Labour government goes into power. I hope to soon. Wanted me to set it in the overall economic context. And the overall economic context is this. At the moment, since the crash in 2007-2008, workers' wages have fallen by over 10%. We've had the biggest fall in wages since the Second World War. I've mentioned the poverty in terms of food banks, but actually as a result of wages falling, we've got the highest level of repossessions of people's homes that we've seen in 20 years. We've got a rising level of homelessness in all our cities. It isn't just London at the moment, it's right the way across it. And you'll see it in Sheffield as well. When I was a kid, beggars were in fairy tales. They didn't exist. They now exist on a scale as a subclass within our society because of poverty, unemployment and low wages as well. And what's staggering too, the introduction of the minimum wage, which I think was a major achievement for a Labour government. And I look back on that time of New Labour, critically on many areas of policy, that actually the minimum wage was a real achievement. But you know, even on the minimum wage, there's nearly 250,000 people out there that don't get the minimum wage. Employers don't pay it, illegally don't pay it. But it's not enforced effectively because we've got BCS reps here, they'll tell you. The staff that are there to enforce the minimum wage have been cut over the years. And as a result of that, 250,000 people out there are not paid the minimum wage by ruthless, unscrupulous employers. So what do we do about it? Let me just go through the programme that we will introduce when we go back into government. First of all, yes, we'll have a real living wage. And that'll be £10 an hour. Let's make it clear. That will analyse the labour market and will advise government on the level of a real living wage. a living wage that Osborne introduced, that is not a living wage, but a real living wage, where people can feed their children, clothe themselves, have a decent roof over their heads, and have a quality of life that they don't have now. There's some employers that we've been talking to about how that will impact upon them, particularly small and medium-sized enterprises. We've said, OK, we understand that. In certain sectors, what we don't want is to introduce it at a cost of jobs. So we will look at employment allowance subsidies to those employers in certain sectors whilst we build up that economy, that local economy or that particular sector economy, to enable it to happen. And we'll write the real living wage into law, so it will be legally enforced. And we'll ensure it is enforced. And we've been working with PCS. What level of staff do you need? What powers do you need in the enforcement agency that's there at the moment? And how can we ensure it's fully resourced to enforce itself? But you know, you can do so much in law. But what you need also is what we've lost over the last 20 to 30 years, which is actually collective bargaining. Two-thirds of us, when I was a kid and left school, I went from factory to factory, two-thirds of us in the 70s, 80s, up until the early 90s, two-thirds of us were covered by a collective bargaining agreement. It's now down to 20%. We'll reintroduce, by law, sexual collective bargaining once again in this country. But you need trade union rights to do that. You need trade union rights to do that. And under New Labour, yes, there was some attempt to restore some trade union rights that we lost under Thatcher, but didn't go far enough. So let me give you this commitment. The Trade Union Act has just gone through. In the first 100 days of a Labour government, we'll scrap it. So what we've committed ourselves to in our programme of Workplace 2020, led by Ian Lavery, an ex-miner, ex-NUO official in prison during the miners' strike, led by him, will adopt the Institute of Employment Rights Charter, which is setting out the need for a Ministry for Labour, the setting out that legislation that we need to repeal, and the installation of trade union rights on this, in this country based upon the ILO conventions, with a restoration for all workers of the right to strike in the same way they have the right way out of here. I just say this as the Shadow Chancellor. Labour governments consistently throughout our history, our ambition, in fact our goal, and we achieved it in this period of time under some Labour administrations, was full employment. We want to ensure full employment as the basic economic policy of the incoming Labour government. The way we do that, but we want to do that in practical terms, because part of the issue about low pay, in this area in particular, is the replacement of high-skilled, high-wage jobs with low-skilled, low-wage jobs. You've seen it. This town, this city, has been devastated as a result of loss of manufacturing industry over the last two generations. What we need is a government that intervenes. What we call Mariana Mazzucato, one of our advisors, was the entrepreneurial state, where the state has a role to play. It intervenes in the economy to support workers and entrepreneurs, the wealth creators, to create the products and the markets that will create a successful economy within the city, within the region, within the country itself. And that needs investment. Part of our problem we've got low pay is we're low productivity. German workers, French workers, American workers produce in 4 days what British workers produce in five and possibly longer in some sectors. Why? It's not because we don't work hard, we work longer hours. In some ways, we're more industrious. It's because of the lack of investment over at least a generation, at least the last 30 to 40 years. What we need is a government that will invest resources. Invest them, yes, in that basics of modernising our infrastructure, the roads, the rail, the renewable energy, the broadband, for that new economy that we need. I want this country not to be the financial centre of Europe. I want it to be the new technology centre of Europe. we're going to do that? It's not rocket science. We're going to set up a national investment bank. We're going to have £250 billion invested directly through government agencies into that new infrastructure that we need. We'll put £100 billion into that national investment bank. That will lever out on the European Investment Bank leverage rates another £150 billion from the private sector. Why am I confident about that? Because at the moment, corporation tax has been cut right the way down. It's on its way down to 17p in the pound. What's that meant? It hasn't stimulated investment. It's meant the private sector are now sitting on between £500 and £700 million of earned income that got invested. We think we can set up a national investment bank. It will lever in private sector investment into that infrastructure improvement. But the most important thing, I think, for a city like this is to know that will not be based in London or the South East. People think I've been watching the Game of Thrones too much. There will be a Bank of the North. That Bank of the North will be based in the North, investing in the North. And what we're saying to councils, Labour councils at the moment, start getting your schemes ready. Start working up now the detail of the infrastructure developments that you want that will put people back to work. The other area as well, to be frank, is the lack of investment in skills over generations now, unfortunately, in this country. So start working up the plans for all those youngsters that need the skills that when we start building again, they'll have the skills to help us on that infrastructure. One final point on infrastructure investment. I don't know what it's like in this city at the moment, you tell me, but in my constituency, I've been there nearly 40 years now, I'm a scouser of this, we lost the accent because we moved south. But I'm representing a West London seat, working class, multicultural. In my constituency tonight, I'll have 200 families homeless in bed and breakfast. We've reinvented the back-to-back family living in the front and renting it out, living in the back renting it out. What do you think the average rent in my constituency is for a two-bed at the moment? £1,600 pretty much. I've got people that they rent sheds out in my constituency, rent them out, sheds and carriages get rented to families. I've got people sitting on the canal, in the parks and all the rest. Why? Because for 30 years we've not been building council houses. So we're going to build a building. Even now is that lack of skills development, so we'll invest in skills to do it. All of this is practical and pragmatic policy making. But you know we need to go further, because we'll never get an equal society unless we democratise our economy. That's why we want, Martin referred to this, we want changes in the governance of companies. Not Theresa May put the odd worker on the board every now and again. We want to look at the German model, where they have supervisory boards, where workers are represented by trade unions as a right on those boards to take investment decisions, and yes, to take decisions about the distribution of the profits of that particular company. In addition to that, we want to start cooperatising our economy. We've given a commitment to the co-op party, I just spoke to them a couple of weeks ago at their conference. We're going to double the cooperative sector in this country. And that will only take us up to the level of the United States, which is meant to be the belly of the beast of capitalism. We think we can go further. It's cooperative developments that we believe can actually ensure that we democratise our economy overall. Let me just say this finally. What does that need? Well, it needs a Labour government. It needs a Labour government. That's what this is all about. Now, we've just gone through a difficult period. Now, up until Jeremy was elected in September of last year, he was as shocked as I was. Don't worry about that. Because I never thought Harry's here, Harry Barnes. Harry and I were in Parliament together. I never thought I'd see a socialist leader of the Labour Party in my lifetime, to be honest. I never thought. And then when Jeremy got elected, it was such a breakthrough for all of us. He was elected on the basis of hope. He gave us all hope. That was translating itself, no matter what they said, that was translating itself actually into success. Electoral victories. One of the challenges against Jeremy was about you can't win elections. Well, we won elections. We won every parliamentary by-election. We won one here. Gujarati, who won every mayoral election. We matched their Blood Bank in local government election at its highest when the recession was the lowest. Funny enough, on the night of the coup, on the Parliamentary Labour Party, where they were begging for Jeremy Blood, saying you can never win elections, the irony of it was, item one on the agenda was to welcome the candidate from Battersea and triple their majority. And they said you couldn't win elections. We can win elections on the basis of a number of things. One is having the practical policies that can change people's lives, that people have confidence in. But the other thing is, actually, we also need courage, determination, and that's what we've seen tonight. We've seen courage to stand up to an employer that's oppressive, bullying, and intimidating, yet still standing up to them. We've seen determination to say, actually, privatisation isn't working, outsourcing isn't working, why don't we start taking services back in-house again in local government? And we've seen the ability to mobilise people in some of the most vulnerable working conditions in the fast food sector as a result of actually swimming against the stream. But what you need above all else, and this is what I say to members of the Parliamentary Labour Party, because people won't vote for a divided party. They won't vote for a party that's dividing itself and ripping itself apart. What we need now is unity. We need unity so that we can campaign out there on the policies that are proving to be pragmatic and practical and successful and implementable and supportable by anyone who's enduring the austerity that we've had in recent years. But above all else, we want what has been displayed tonight and what you've displayed every time you've stood up, applauded or whatever. And as I say time and time again, the secret we learned 150, 200 years ago in the workshops of the Industrial Revolution, in the fields. We put it on our banners, unity is strength, injury to one is an injury to all. Workers united will never be defeated. It's the secret of solidarity. That's what we've seen tonight. Jeremy's just gone through an extremely bruising leadership election. He's with Harry will tell you, I've known Jeremy 30, 40 years. He's the most caring, compassionate person I've ever met in politics. He's let it wash all over him, but the abuse and all the rest that he suffered during that period has been appalling. But he's come out of it courageously. But why has he stood there as a result of it? Why did he stand again? Why did he fight the leadership election again? Not because he's career ambitious or anything like that. He jumped during the socialist campaign route for a career move, I tell you. Why did he stand up that? Because he feels he has a responsibility to the movement overall that elected him in the first instance. Sheffield tonight, you're demonstrating it. Solidarity.